Tribe first. Tribe first. Whether it's our family tribe or our national tribe, America first, or whether it's the tribes of the San Francisco or the Kansas City people, tribe always first. Because that's how we get our identity. We get our identity by the color of the t-shirts that we choose to wear. And we cling to that identity because it gives us a sense of belonging, of being really important, and of being holy. And of course, the thing that makes one holy, and what always made one holy in ancient days, was separation. It was separation from the unholy, and the separation from the clean and the unclean, the good and the bad, the black hat and the white hat, the good guys with the gun against the bad guys with the gun. That's how we think that's what makes us holy. And that's what we find today in Leviticus. The Jewish people, well, if you were deformed, if you had a disease, if you were sick in any way, there was a reason for that. And the reason for that is you probably were being punished. Remember, they kept on asking Job, what did you do wrong? If you're being punished so severely, what did you do wrong? So obviously, whatever this person did, even if they were not aware of it themselves, they did something wrong. And they could not become members of the community. As a matter of fact, and I don't think it was because it was fear of contagion. I don't think they had a great sense of contagiousness at that period. But it was outside of the community. That you could not, because the community, if it gets contaminated, if there is a contaminating element, that may spread through the whole batch. You know, one bad apple can spoil the whole batch. And so they had to be separated. Of course, the law was clear. Here's what you are to do. You stand your distance. You ring your bell. You bare your head. You muffle your beard. And then the greatest ignominy of all, you got to cry out, unclean, unclean. I am unclean. Stay away from me. There is a strict boundary, but I am outside that boundary. And there's no life outside the tribe. And that's the scary part. You know, when I was in high school, I remember I was about a junior when I think I read Romeo and Juliet for the first time. And of course, they belonged to two different tribes, two different families, the Montagues and the Capulets, and they hated each other, and not one should ever cross the line of the other. And of course, these two did more than cross the line. They fell in love. And I can remember asking my teacher, why don't they just leave town, for crying out loud? Yeah. I mean, that made perfect sense to me. If they're that much in love and they can't live in this little community, you find another community to live in. And she said, no, you don't understand. For them, and it really is true, there's no world outside of Verona. You see, the narratives we are given as children go really deep. And of course, the narratives of identity, whether it's political identity or religious identity or national identity, go very, very deep. And they had no concepts of life outside of Verona. They could not be happy outside of where they were told and believed they were called to be happy. Father Anthony DeMello used to tell the story of a tribe in Africa where if you were shunned, if there was a sin committed against the tribe, they would not only stop speaking to you, they would not allow you inside the village. And he says, and it happened over and over and over again. They died. Now, there was nothing physically wrong with them. They were physically fine. They could have survived. But they could not imagine life outside. Separation, we're told, kills. And it does. and we live in a separate world, a dualistic world, inside, outside, upside, downside, good side, bad side. And it's baked in. I mean, it really is baked in. So how do we deal with it? And of course, this is where Jesus comes on the scene. Jesus is on the scene and he's walking through the community, and we don't know if this man is alone or if there's anybody else watching what's going on. We don't know what's going on, but we do know one thing. He breaks a boundary. He comes right up to Jesus. He's close to him. He's breathing distance. And he gets down on his knees before Jesus, and he says, Lord, if you will, you can heal me. Jesus, and then Mark's got a little, I mean, it's almost like a throwaway line. He says, moved with pity. Not the best translation. The best translation was from the bowels of compassion. You know, I really believe that love may be the queen of the virtues, but compassion seems to be the most godlike. If Jesus entered into our pain, into our suffering, as Jesus did, he did so because he was from the bowels of his compassion, compasio, to suffer with, to be willing to go beyond the boundaries and the limits. And so he felt the pain. You know, Clinton used to say, I feel your pain. Well, Jesus really did. And we're called to do exactly the same thing too. And so what does he do? Well, we know what he does. I do will it. And there's only one thing. God has only one agenda for each and every one of us, and that's the fullness of life. And that all may be one. I mean, Jesus is really clear on his agenda. Of course I do. Of course I want you healed. And so he touches him. Well, obviously that's a no-no. And then he strictly warns him. He's going to give him a little lecture. He's going to say, now, here's what you do. I know what you want more than anything else in the world. You want to get back into community, because there's no life outside Verona. So what you need to do is go and follow the law. He's following the ritual. He's following the law. He's not taking him outside the law. Go back and show yourself to the priest, because Aaron or his successors are the ones who have to declare you clean or unclean. And as soon as he is declared clean, he's alive again. You know, lepers were corpses. They were basically dead people outside the community. He's alive again. And of course, what does he do? Well, he does what everybody in Mark does. Blab, blah, 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 blah. Hey, guess what happened to me? Hey, look at this. I'm clean. Jesus cleaned me up. And of course, what happened to Jesus? Well, he just became ritually unclean. And the great paradox is that the one who healed now is cut out. He's ritually unclean, so much so that he could not go out into the villages. He had not been purified by touching the leper. So he just switched roles with the lepers. The leper's now clean. Jesus is unclean. However, what's going on? People don't care. They don't care. They're going to go see him. They're going to go see him because he wants to do the same thing for him, and that's what he did for them. That's cross the boundaries. That's unitive consciousness. Unitive consciousness, that contemplative consciousness, says that all of creation is one. We are intimately related to each other. The boundaries that we build, the walls that we put up to keep us from each other, are artificial. They will not last. You need to go beyond. Now, this goes all the way to Francis's time, you know. And we know the story of Francis, who he really wanted to help the poor, but every time he saw somebody with leprosy, his stomach turned. We had a bishop here in our diocese at one time. He was an auxiliary bishop from India. And every time he had to anoint a kid with oil for confirmation, his stomach turned because they were below his class. Talk about the power of the narrative. What an incredible power. The man literally got sick. Now, he knew he had to do it. He had to overcome it. He had to go beyond his boundaries. But because his narrative was so strong of the class, he was of the Brahmin class, he was of the higher class, to touch those, well, anything else below that is an untouchable. And so he got literally sick. And well, that was Francis. Francis saw him and he went, oh, I can't do this. I can't do this. Francis knew the scriptures. He knew. And what he touched. I was asking Sister Mary Lou, did he kiss him or did he touch him? She said, I think he did both. Who cares? Who cares? There's an apocryphal story about Bishop Sheen, who was in the same way, the same boat, another bishop who was going to various lepers. And in a leper colony, I think it's an apocryphal story, but the story says that as he was going by, he was dropping the crucifix into their hands and dropping another one and dropping another one. And then he realized, he said, what am I doing? This is not right. He says, so I came to the next one and I put the crucifix in his hand and I took my hand in his and he walked away with my heart and I walked away with his hand. Terrible joke. This was the only congregation that would ever try that on. And obviously it'll never be tried again. Mea culpa, mea, Lent is coming, mea maxima culpa, confiteor, Señor. What's the story? What's the meaning? This has to be our story. We need to give a hand up as well as a hand out. We need to go beyond our comfort zones. We need to touch the refugee. We need to touch the unclean. And if we touch them with the grace of God, then it's not me first or America first or my group number one. We learn how to do this, and we are all called to do this. And in the great game of life, we all win the Super Bowl.